ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And a whole bunch of other people are turning 52 this year, and the famous and world-leading Dunedin study is set to break new ground by researching them. Next month, it will launch its assessments of the 52-year-olds in its cohort, adding this age category to its extensive data set. It's known as the most detailed study of human health and development in the world. It's a longitudinal study. It means they study these people for ages and has followed the lives of 1,037 babies born between April 1972 and March 1973. So the babies were most recently assessed. Well, they're not babies anymore. They're 45, some of them. Well, they were when they were last assessed. Now, coming up to 52, it's a chance, researchers say, to understand a neglected but important period of life and time of change. The study director is Research Professor Moana Theodore, who joins me now. Hi, Moana.
Kia ora, Jesse.
Kia ora, lovely to have you on the show. You're set to launch on April 8. Can you give us a bit of a background, though? Plenty of people have heard of the Dunedin study, but in a nutshell, what is it and what makes it unique?
Yeah, well, you've done a lovely introduction already about some of the background of it. So as you mentioned, it's considered the most detailed study of human health and development in the world. More than 1,000 babies born in Dunedin in the early 1970s and followed since then. So it is the longest running study of this kind in New Zealand. It's not the oldest, longest running study worldwide, and it's not the largest anymore as well. But what makes it so unique is that we've had this amazing participation rate from our study members. And so that means that we see, last time at age 45, we saw 94% of our of the study members, which is remarkable. So worldwide, I think the most that other studies see are about 70%. And why that's so important and makes it so unique is it's usually the people that don't participate. So that 30%, 40%, 50% that don't participate, they do it for reasons such as health issues or complicated lives. Whereas we see them all, and what that means is our study members are from all walks of life. So it tells us about the full range of human experiences and health and well-being.
Oh, that's a very effective way of explaining it. Thank you. And gosh, there's probably a separate psychology research study to work out why these people have stuck with it. Something possibly to do with being part of a wider purpose, perhaps.
Yeah, we have an incredible team, a long-term group of staff that are just obviously really committed in terms of working with the study members to be able to come back in. But actually the true heroes of this study are the study members. You know, you mentioned, and we're so excited, we're going to be seeing them again next month at for the age 52 assessment. And the reason that they say they come in and the reason they've contributed half a century of service for science, for New Zealanders, you know, and now internationally, is because they want to make a difference in the lives of others. So the information that they share about their lives and about their health, they want it to make other Kiwis' lives better. But now, more and more, the study has had an impact internationally in terms of our understanding of people's health.
Yeah. But I'm just as a side note, fascinated by these people. I wonder if their lives have been enriched by knowing what they've been able to create as a participant in the study.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a commitment in the sense that we try not to bother them too much in between assessment phases, which as they've gotten older, when they were first, when they were little, they would be seen every 2 to 3 years. And as adults, things change less rapidly in terms of development. So we've seen them about every 7 years. So we try to commit to not interfering with their lives too much. And also because when they do come in, we have such a full-on time in terms of our assessment with them. And I can tell you a little bit more about what happens when they come on in.
Yeah, do.
As well. Yeah, okay. So when they do come in, they come in for a full day of assessments. And then a second day, they do an MRI brain scan, which means we did that last time. We're doing that again. We have brain scans for, you know, a representative group of the population, nearly 1,000, which is remarkable. In terms of the 8-hour day, they'll come in at 8:30, and we do we ask them all sorts of questions about their lives, their employment, their relationships, and then we do a range of physical tests. And this is what makes it quite different from other studies that just generally tend to ask questions, which is fine. But because all the study members come back in, we're able to do physical measures of their health as well. So that's lung function, which we've been doing for a long time. Dental, which includes a 3D dental scan now. We do vision and hearing. Now, it was really important when they were children, really important as we start to look at aging as well in middle age. We collect blood. We do even measures of their physical function, look at their walking, balance. A range of things. So they're in for a full 8 hours day, and it's such a big commitment, and they just do it with so much grace.
And I think the first of them is about to turn 52. So what can you learn about them at 52 that you couldn't learn about them at 45 when you last checked in?
Yeah, so I think this the middle period of life is understudied. We look at people when they're young, or we look at them when they're older. So just having that information in middle age is really important. It's a time of change. So people, in terms of just people's lives, their children are getting older, or they might be looking after their parents who are also getting older. So that's important just to say in general. But it's also become, and this sounds strange because they're only 50 as you mentioned, it's become increasingly a study of ageing. And so with all of those measures that I've talked about, those physical measures, we're able to look at how people are biologically ageing. So they're all 52, but what we know from our study members is there's a wide range in how well their body systems are aging. Our very first paper, to give you an example on aging, or one of our big first papers, was published in 2015, and based on the information when they were 38. What we found, though, is biologically, based on those tests I was telling you about, our study members' biological age ranged from early 20s to late 50s. Mm. And that measure of aging has been able to predict other things, such as their quality of life, how well they're cognitive in terms of thinking and things like that. So it tells us, even before you reach 65, that there's a range in how people are aging and how people will be when they get to old age, and types of supports we may need to put in place for people at that age, not just based on chronical aging. Why that's important is an aging population, and understanding how people are aging and how different people are aging is really important.
What are some of the findings that you've made so far in the Dunedin study that have been particularly significant?
Yeah, that's always a tough one because there's been 1,400 papers published, so it's quite difficult to choose a sort of a favourite one. Look, I could, I've mentioned the more recent work on ageing. I think that's really important. You know, when they were children, the study reported for the first time these really high rates of glue. So the importance of intervening in relation to hearing, which impacts on learning, injury prevention measures that were put in place based on the findings when they were children, things like safety mats in playgrounds, thermostats on hot water cylinders to stop scalding and burns, and also shortening of jug cords. So kettles, to reduce, kettles being accidentally pulled off the bench and causing
Gee, that's a good one.
It is, yeah. I think about actually our study, our findings on mental health. I think increasingly as society we are understanding the importance of not just physical health but mental health. And this study has looked at mental health since they were 11. So using a full assessment of mental health, so clinical measures to look at people's mental health. What the study found by last phase at age 45 was that by the time the study members had reached 45, 86% of them had reported at least one diagnosable mental health condition in their lifetime. So, and how that's how we examine that is it takes into account things like externalizing mental health conditions, alcohol dependence, drug, a conduct disorder, internalizing depression, anxiety, and also thought disorders like OCD. Now, for most of our study members, they would have one or they would come in and out of these mental health conditions. For others, they would have them earlier, they might have a family history, and they might have them for longer. What that finding shows is that using this group, which we know catches everybody, is it reduces the stigma around mental health conditions. Because if you think that only 1 in 10 of us have not had a mental health condition by the time we reach midlife, it reduces that stigma and it begets kindness in the way that we treat others, particularly those that may suffer more from these types of conditions.
Moana, how long have you been in the job for?
Yep. So I was actually an interviewer at the age of 26 assessments back in 98, 99.
Cool.
Went away, came back, did some postdoctoral research. So I've been one of the many New Zealanders that's been able to train on the study. And then I became the director late last year after the very sad passing of the previous director, who was a mentor of mine, Emeritus Professor Richie Poulton.
How long do you think you'll be in the job? What's your plan?
We always think long term, longer term researchers. So we're always thinking about the next phase or the next phase. So likely to be in their late 50s. And then, of course, we'd love to see them again at 65 when all those policies on aging, you know, start to occur. You know, it's such a privilege to have this role. I think we are all naturally inquisitive about our fellow human beings and what makes us tick. It's such a privilege. I hope to, you know, continue on. And I'm also the same age as the study members as well.
So it's
fascinating.
Yeah.
So Generation X. And so it's fascinating to be working in. And I'm so looking forward to meeting the study members. To be working with you know, my fellow generation.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm really pleased to meet you. Good work on this and enjoy this next little phase of research.
Oh, look, thank you so much for having me on and allowing me to share with the listeners about the next stage of this incredible study.
Dunedin Study Director, Research Professor Rere Moana Theodore.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.